Welcome to Beyond Four Walls, where we look beyond the basics of block management. In today's episode, I am thrilled to introduce Laura Dent, who is the director of So Fresh and So Clean, a commercial and specialist cleaning company based in Wiltshire. As an entrepreneur and business owner within the cleaning industry, Laura has not only established a successful company, but also prioritises a healthy work-life balance and values her team's well-being as well as the well-being of her customers. Laura's impact extends beyond business, as she also has established a charitable arm called More So. Laura is dedicated to using a portion of the company's profits to give back to the local community, providing specialist cleaning services to those living in unsafe conditions and supporting their mental health aftercare. Laura, thank you so much for coming today. I appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
You're very welcome. So what inspired you to start your business way back when you decided to do it?
Well, I didn't actually start my business. My husband did, back when he was made redundant back in 2011-2012. He was a professional carpet cleaner then for another cleaning company. And the company went into liquidation, basically. And he's always been one of those that kind of wanted to do things for himself rather than working for someone else.
So,
you know, we had no money. We had two young babies. We had nothing to lose, literally nothing to lose. So, yeah, that's how the cleaning company originated from, was from a redundancy position.
And you decided to give it a go and turn it into what it is today?
I did, yeah. So I joined in 2016. I was kind of helping him in the background anyway, a little bit, but not a lot. He was doing most of it, and it was just him at the time. Mm-hmm. And then I joined in 2016, and that's when we started recruiting and going more into the commercial sector.
So how do you, not just as a business owner, but also for your staff as well, try and maintain that healthy work-life balance?
Both of us have come from backgrounds where we felt like we were just a number working in a business. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of what pushed us into being self-employed and having our own business. I think it's just keeping that alive all the time, because employing staff is not easy.
No.
Because obviously there's a lot to it. You're not just giving someone a job role, you are managing people and their, you know, personalities and problems, as in work, you know, everybody works differently. So it's just keeping, always going back to the keeping it in mind, how would I want to be treated in this situation from a manager?
Yeah,
and that always comes back to the forefront of my mind when I'm dealing with staff.
I said in the intro, if you like, about the charitable arm that you've got of the company. We've also collaborated in terms of mental health crisis cleans. I mean, obviously it's something that you have established and you have done, but I wanted to bring it into my own business because, you know, it's something that I feel very passionately about, and supporting residents in their homes. So to be able to collaborate with you on that is amazing. But what made you want to do it and to train in that sort of area?
It's a really good question. I was diagnosed with a few chronic illnesses. I've always worked, and when I was working for a corporate company, I finally got diagnosed with ME back in 2006, it's great now because I've just driven across Gorse Hill and I saw it on a poster.
Okay.
And I, you know, it was one
people
of those...
People know more about it now.
Yeah, and it was one of those things that people thought was made up, or they laugh at you and there was no support or anything. And in the workplace I was at the time, even though I was taking steps to improve my health and understanding it, you know, I was more than capable of working. It was just managing my sickness, and you know, I was managing it quite well, and it had improved dramatically.
Mm-hmm.
But they were just interested in getting me out. That was it.
Right.
They didn't want to have to deal with it. They didn't want to have to deal, you know, with somebody with an illness. It's a very lonely place when you're not getting listened to by doctors, when family and friends don't understand, and then your workplace pushes you out somewhere for something that's completely beyond your control.
Yeah.
It's a very lonely and dark place to be. So I suppose I have that element of knowing what it's like to either be ill or have mental health depression, and feel lost and alone, and what that leads to.
Mm-hmm.
So when we went through COVID, and you know, that realization of, oh, am I just running this business for profits, because that money isn't enough for me anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Not that it's like I've got loads of money, but it wasn't my motivation to get up in the morning. It's just to get up, pay bills, go to bed, get up, pay bills, go to bed.
Mm-hmm.
So I needed something more purpose.
Yeah.
We did training, and I tried to integrate as much as I can the more specialist work, to work with people with mental health. I say it's not really issues. There's either a short term or a long term burden that's happened and it's changed their circumstances. There are places you can reach out to, but I know how lonely it is, and we get people reach out to us rather than, you know, doctors or nurses. I think everybody prefers a different method. People tend to not want to speak to family and friends. So it's just offering that, you know, lifeline to people that need it with the discretion that they need.
So as well as the mental health cleans, you also do, is it after death cleans?
We do,
yeah. You do? Yeah. Tell me a bit about that.
Yeah, so if when somebody passes away in a property, the right people come and take them away. But if they've been left there for a while, or if their circumstances prior to their death has caused issues in the property, because we've done a lot of alcoholics, and a lot comes with that. It's a very rare situation to be in.
Yeah.
But there's nobody there to clean up after. You know, they would take the person away, but then either the landlord or the property or the family of the property are then left to clean up anything that needs to be cleaned up afterwards.
Okay.
So yeah, we provide that service.
That's amazing. It's not something that you hear a lot of, really, is it?
No, not something you hear a lot of, and not really a situation you want to be in.
Yeah.
And you'll be surprised how many people are in that situation that never thought they would be. And
yeah, of course.
You know, there's a lot of shock to it, because not only are they, death's hard enough as it is, lots to deal with, and then you've got to deal with getting a property to either give back to a landlord or sell it because the person's died, so all solicitors need to get involved. So yeah, you would never normally think that would be a process that you have to deal with. It's more common than you think.
Well, I suppose if you've got to clear a house of a loved one and just clear their belongings, that's one thing, and that's difficult enough. But if they're struggling with a mental health condition, as you say, alcoholic, or they're hoarding or anything like that, that's just another thing on top that
usually,
and sometimes you just don't know which way to turn. So it's amazing that you provide that service.
We've just done one recently, and I think it's just a big relief for the family to know that they haven't got to deal with that element of it, because you want to remember your loved ones as you remember them. You
of
don't
course.
Want to remember that side of it.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's quite an honour to take that away from them.
In terms of the qualities that you would therefore look for in the staff that you employ, are there any specific qualities, if you like, that you have to look for or you look out for?
I kind of go the opposite end, and I like to employ people that have, I don't know how, I need to be PC about it, but normally people that have like mental health conditions themselves.
Right, okay.
Or people that have like ADHD, or they have bipolar. Not that I particularly put that in a job advert.
No.
But I usually find they're the type of people that come forward for these type of jobs. Mainly because I think that people like that tend to have more empathy, and they kind of tend to know what it's like to be alienated or feel left out or feel lonely. So they tend to want to throw themselves into work where it helps other people's mental health, whether it's, you know, the mental health crisis cleaning or a bit more of the specialist cleaning. I think it's more challenging for them and it's more rewarding for them, because they know what it's like to be in a working world where they're not accepted as well. I know we've come a long way, but there's still that stigma, isn't there? Yeah, and there's still the way to come as well. There's still we've still got more progress to make in the business world when accepting, being inclusive.
Absolutely. And do you find people, attack is probably the wrong word, but do you find people get cross with you for maybe enabling that behaviour, if you like? I say that in air quotes, obviously, but, you know, enabling people to, well, I can just do all of this and somebody else is going to clean it up. I get it a lot in block management, like completely different scenario, I suppose, but like if somebody dumps all of their stuff in the bin store, and it's just like, well, if you clear it up, you're enabling them to do it again. But if you don't clear it up, then the place is a mess. And I know we've spoken about this before, that, you know, some people would just class hoarding as lazy when actually it's a whole other level to it.
I differentiate like hoarding with mental health crisis cleaners, in like mental health crisis cleaning can be a long-term hoarder that's had a short-term crisis and then they've reverted back.
Okay.
Or you could just have someone that's gone into like a depression state and they've, you know, it's a mental health crisis clean. So they are slightly different, but I think what people don't understand is it is a mental health condition. People aren't just, it's not lazy people that are just going to live however they want and expect someone to come in for free and clear up. It's not, but the people that we work with, they know their situation, they're probably just coming out of something. I don't know if it, I've experienced depression before, and that, you know, that interim period when you first start to come out of it and you kind of start awakening from your surroundings.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, what's going on here? Like, and then they think, right, I need to do something about this. And then it's like, whoa, look what's around me, because they didn't see it before.
Yeah. And it's like,
it wasn't on their list of priorities. They did not see it.
Of course.
And then it's like, whoa. And then it's like, okay, now it's overwhelmed. Oh my God, I want to start to get this sorted, but
where do I start?
It's too overwhelming. It's too much for one person to do, or for that person to take on, and they kind of accept the fact that they need outside help.
Yeah.
And then that's usually at the point, because you cannot do this type of work if somebody's not ready for it. You cannot go into a hoarder's house and start clearing out their stuff if they are not ready for it. You are just enabling them to get worse.
Yeah. And you're throwing out somebody's life, aren't you?
It's like going into somebody's mind and taking all their memories and saying, I'm going to run off with them. That's how they, you know, that's very similar to how they're very protective of their items for a reason. They're very emotionally attached to them.
Yeah.
For a reason. And until you deal with that reason, you know, they're never going to be ready for you to come in, and it can actually make them worse.
Yeah.
Sometimes it is forced, like when the house gets to a state, and you know, say like, you know, local welfare's got involved.
Yeah,
sometimes
a safety problem.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. And of course, you have to get it done for safety problems. But the element of that's missing is the help that person actually needs.
Yeah.
And you can't necessarily give help to someone who's not ready for it either.
No,
so
definitely not.
It's a very tricky balance to deal with.
Yeah. Well, I think it's amazing what you're doing.
Thank you.
More people should look to you as a, you know, a beacon of light in a way.
I think it's just being open. I think we can all be very closed off, and if we don't understand something, you know, that's the first words that come out of our mouth, isn't it? Oh, I don't understand this. And why would they do that? That's from a place of not understanding.
Yeah.
So it's just,
or being, that's not normal.
Yeah.
Or what's normal?
Or what's normal?
Yeah.
Like, you know, also the extreme of it is not, you know, someone who's got OCD in their house and, you know, they clean 8 hours a day.
Yeah.
To a point where it would never be clean enough, that's not normal either. That's a mental health illness that needs to be. There's, you know, there's other elements going on there. So, you know, where is the balance? Are we all balanced? I don't think we all are.
No, probably not.
I think we've all got our own things going on. You know, we're not, there isn't a goal there to be perfect and live in a perfect way.
Mm.
It's just, you know, let's manage everybody who needs the help in the right way and a healthy way.
I mean, how many crisis cleans have you done?
Well, we've only really been starting to do the crisis clean for about a year now. I can't count on my hand how many we've done. I mean, I don't know, probably about 20 to 30.
Where is that defining moment, if you like, of this is what I really want to do? Was it your mental health first aid training? Was it something else that triggered the fact that you wanted to do that? Or was it your own health battles that
it
you...
It worked for... During COVID, we did some work in a hotel where the council... we're using to house the homeless at the time, and we knew the hotel owners because we'd been in there before. I went to school with one of them, and they said, look, you know, can you come in and do this and that? You know, it was when it was all locked down, but we were still able to work. And then we got to know some of the workers, and then we kind of got on the books and started doing jobs for them. And we did one job because we'd done all the need, this is before we did the mental health crisis clean, and we'd done the biohazard training and the needle sweep training, and we did a needle sweep in a crack den, if you want to say it. It was a young woman's house, and she was pregnant, and it was, you know, overtaken by drug users, and she inevitably was a drug user herself, and her partner went to prison, and she couldn't bear going back to the flat on her own because she's used to having her partner support there, and she just couldn't go back.
Right.
And I never met the lady. I don't know her name. So it's all, you know, it's all very protected. And we were called in to get the flat sorted so they could move her back in. So we were like, okay, great, you know, just turning up to a normal job. We've kind of, because this isn't a case of throwing everything else, it's just organising all her belongings, all her kitchen belongings, and taking out all the bad belongings that have been left.
All the nasty stuff.
So, so when they come back in, they can help her sort her life out. But we didn't know that side of it. We're just told, here's a job, can you go and do this? And we go and do it.
Okay.
And then the key worker, adult social worker, messaged me like 2 days later. And I just never expected it. And I didn't realise what we had done. And she was like, I just want to let you know the feedback from my client.
Mm-hmm.
And she had told me like how it changed her life. She'd come back to the flat, how safe she felt, that she was now going to go on the scribe to come off the drugs to try and keep her baby, because, you know, at the end of it, the baby would have, it was going to be taken off her because she was on drugs. But she had that then, the ambition or the motivation to actually see that she's got a future.
Yeah, and that she gave her some hope.
Give her some hope, yeah. I mean, I don't know what happened to her after that. I mean, you know, I hope that she carried on, but, you know, that's quite a tough journey to go through. We had a ripple effect on that.
Yeah.
Like, we did something, like... And I was like, and it was just the feeling it brang. And it was just like, I didn't, you know, first it was like, right, it's a paid job. And now it's like, well, I could have changed some kid's life. You know, that baby could have a mother, like her, you know, instead of going into the system or whatever. You know, you just don't know the possibilities.
Yeah.
So, and that was it. Then I was hooked. And I was like, right, how can I do more of this?
What more can we do? Yeah.
Yeah, how can I help more people that need this type of help? So, and that's where the path went. And I was like, I was just blown away by the response because I just wasn't expecting it. And then when we do jobs now for clients directly, and like, you know, we have a saying in the company, like, oh, I can't wait to see them cry. And that sounds bad when you say that.
Cause I know what you mean, though.
Because you think that's going to be like, oh, they're going to cry because they're so happy. No, it's because when they see their property or their home to what they wanted it to be in their head, and it's like the relief.
Yeah.
It's like the trauma is like being lifted from them, and it comes out in the form of tears, and it's healthy because it's like, right, you know, this is the part to let go of what you've been living in and to start afresh. You know, it's those moments that make you go, right, I need to help more people, because now that they're at that stage, how many people can they help in their job roles? Because most of these people do have jobs, you know, and they have quite strenuous jobs that you know, that are working out in like the police and doctors and NHS.
Yeah.
So you're just a small part of them being able to help many more people. It's like a ripple effect.
Well, I suppose there's an element of shame that would be associated with going back to maybe hoarding, or they've let their house go into, you know, it's so dirty, they wouldn't want anybody to know, because they have these very professional jobs and they're very outwardly successful, I suppose, that they wouldn't, there is that going to be that level of shame that they don't want that. So if you can then come in and help those people to not feel that emotion, that must be really powerful for you as a team as well.
Yeah, it's really empowering. Well, not in an egotistical way, but you just feel like you're kind of flying in and saving someone's life and then giving them the tools they need, and then flying back out again.
Yeah. Oh, it makes me want to cry, honestly.
Yeah, I do it. Like, I've had a few clients, and they're, you know, on the last day, most jobs are 2 to 3 days. Sometimes it takes longer, sometimes it's just a day. It just depends. And then, you know, when they're more comfortable with you, and then they start opening up as the process goes along, and they sit there in front of you and go, like, honestly, like, you've saved my life. Thank you so much.
That's
and
amazing.
I just kind of, like, stop, don't say anything.
Yeah.
Like, don't say another word.
Just be professional.
Don't make me cry. Anybody, I think, that's in this line of work, not just the cleaning, but therapy work, or, you know, health professionals, you know, to get that feedback, that, you know, that's what gives you the momentum to keep going with it.
How do your team then react? Do they have like a debrief in a way,
yeah,
and like have to decompress what they've just seen and what
yeah.
they've just experienced?
Yeah, we do. Like, before we go in, we get mentally prepared, and then during, and then after. But I mean, it doesn't finish there. You don't just leave someone and never think about them again.
No.
So we do have like a helpline where our staff can ring for mental health support at any time, and we usually talk like all the time within the team about situations, especially like the after death cleans.
Yeah.
Some of us kind of do little rituals where we light incense, we do a little ceremony at the property, you know. Aww. We all have like our individual ways of dealing with it.
Yeah. Well, that's lovely.
Yeah, because it is quite it's difficult, because we have to then remember that we're also taking on that mental health impact of being in a situation that you don't want to see anybody like that. So it's difficult, but we all have our own processes of dealing with it.
Yeah. So in terms of the charitable arm that you've got from the company, so it's called More So.
Yeah.
I presume that's come from all of these things that you do around mental health and your own experience and stuff, but just tell me a little bit more about that.
Yeah, we started More So up last year. It's not as running fully as I wanted to do, but it will be this year. It's a CIC, so it's a community interest company, and we wanted to start something that didn't take a lot of red tape in the background to try and manage. This kind of work is very reactive. You know, I didn't want people coming to us and saying, hey, can you help us with this? And it's like, hey, there's some application forms. And
yeah.
There's a 3-month process. And by then, you've lost that person. They thought, oh, sorry, it's too hard. I can't do this. I'm going to just carry on living this way. Do you know what I mean? It's very reactive. So,
yeah. Or worst case, something terrible happens to them because they've got to wait for so long to get help.
Yeah, one of our ladies fell in a hoard and was there for 8 hours and she was black and blue. It would have been a, you know, end of life for her. So although we still want to do fundraising and apply for funding, I didn't want to just solely rely on that because we know how much of, you know, mental health aid has been cut this year. So I thought, right, how can I keep this momentum going with flow of cash? Because, you know, one job, your disposal cost alone could be over £1,000. Yeah. That's set, you know, that's set by, you know, when you're taking it to the local centre. So, you know, jobs rarely come under £1,000 if it has disposal on there. And that's a lot of money, like, for somebody to try and find. The labour is quite expensive as well, like the specialist cleaning with the, you know, the courses that we do, you know, it does cost money. There's a lot of investment in it. So some people can afford it, some people can't. We do payment plans, or we can either try and fund it through the charity or contribute towards it, some of the cost through the charity, to help more people get the help that they need. But it also, we're trying to make it support and aftercare, so we don't just come in and do a clean and then leave, especially with hoarders, because they tend to, you'll be back there in 18 months doing the same thing. We're trying to add an element of using a health professional and giving them a few sessions afterwards with them, so they could try and understand what's going on with them and get to the root of, you know, where the problem lies, so they can actually heal.
Yeah.
You know, I don't want return customers.
No.
These are my one clients that I don't want to see again.
Yeah.
But I would love to pass them down the street and be like, hey, like, you know, you look amazing, you're doing great.
Yeah.
But you don't want, if you don't, if we could choose, we, you know, they would move on and not need our services ever again. That would be amazing.
Yeah. So in terms of your services, we'll move away slightly from the mental health and crisis cleans and everything. In terms of your services, is it just commercial cleaning, you know, in your day-to-day bread and butter work?
Day-to-day. So we do commercial cleaning. Obviously, we do carpet cleaning because Neil's been doing that for donkey's years, so he's our professional carpet cleaner. So yeah, we do all types of commercial cleaning, from offices, block management, HMOs, any kind of like contracted work.
And then
carpet cleaning, and then we do our specialist cleaning, because we also do like needle sweeps, and I've mentioned that, haven't I? So we kind of do that on the side. Not on the side. It's definitely not on the side.
No.
But yeah, we do that as well.
Bit of a trickier question, I suppose. Okay, in terms of motivation then, what motivates you to continue to make like a positive impact in everything you do, from cleaning somebody's carpet to needle sweeps to mental health cleans? You know, there's such a wide range of services there, and probably a wide range of customers as well, or clients.
Yeah, you know, when they say, like, what's your ideal client?
Well, there isn't one.
And I'm like, everyone.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's me. I haven't got an avatar. I think when you have a business with good morals and beliefs, like, the staff that we have attracted are, like, are similar to us.
Yeah.
As in the way, you know, we think and feel about things. And then you seem to attract the same clients. Like, you know, we're part of the Living Wage Foundation. A lot of our commercial clients are, and they kind of understand, you know, we're not the most expensive, but we're not the cheapest, because we don't pay minimum wage.
Yeah.
So I think that the thing that keeps me going is, well, I feel like we're a good company to work for. I think cleaning industry gets a hard name. Everybody thinks it's an unskilled, low-paid job, when actually it's not. It takes a lot.
Or you're just a cleaner.
You're just a cleaner.
Clearly, you're not just a cleaner, are you?
You need a chemistry degree just to figure out what you can use on a shower screen.
I'm sure,
So, you know, but there's a lot to it. It's not just about cleaning. There's so much to the job. So if I could carry on employing more to actually just provide that employment where I get people come to me and it's like they're shell-shocked. You know, they come on interviews and they're like, they think they're saying all the, they need to say all the right things. Right. I'm like, look, just be yourself.
Yeah.
Just take a breath, take a step back. Like, I don't, you know, I'm not going to ask you all these really silly interview questions. Oh, where you
corporate speak, yeah.
I'm like, how's you? What's your life like? What's your work balance life? Because I try to fit in job roles around people's lives.
Yeah, of course.
Everybody needs to work. Well, not everybody, but most people need to work. And when they come to, you know, for an interview, I'd rather them, instead of going, yeah, I can do that, knowing full well they probably can, and then in a few weeks it's like, they're struggling to commit, and it's like, well, I'd rather give you hours around your life.
Yeah, and know what you can do from the offset, and be able to help you with to achieve that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So they get their balance, we get our balance. I've got someone who appreciates their job. I've got, you know, they've got somebody who appreciates them as an employee. Like, the balance works.
Yeah.
I think you don't have to bend over backwards for people, but if you really understand business, the way a business works and the way people work, and smush the two together.
Well, it's about people though, isn't it?
Yeah, because, but to me that seems like it's common sense. I never really understand jobs where it's like, right, these are the hours, you must do this, and it's kind of like, well, not everyone's built that way. You know, I've got some staff that can't deal with repetitive jobs, so I wouldn't send them to the same place, you know, in the same pattern. And I'm like, right, you'll be great for the ad hoc work. Or, you know, I've got some people that prefer evenings.
You can tailor your services in a way to what client A, client B, plus client 1, 2, 3 needs, if you see what I mean.
Exactly.
You know, you've got the ability to be able to tailor that. Yeah, and you get what you need as well.
Yeah, I've got a great company with great staff.
Yeah, well, that's amazing though, isn't it?
Yeah, and it's freed me up to do more of the mental health work, which is, you know.
Yeah, well, hopefully we can work together more on that
as
time goes on. Is there anything you'd want to add? Or how can everybody find you?
Yeah, you can find us. We've got our website, www.sofreshandsoclean.org.uk, and we're on Instagram, we're on Facebook, we're on LinkedIn and TikTok. TikTok's quite fun.
Oh, okay.
You can see some of our gruesome videos on there.
Oh, nice.
They get some views if you like the before and afters.
Oh, that's interesting though.
So yeah, we're across all the socials. You can reach out to us.
Okay, well, thank you very much for coming. I appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Take care.